Green Scene on the Pat Kenny Show with AIB, working alongside Irish communities towards a low carbon future. AIB, for the life you're after.
In this week's Green Scene, artificial intelligence analysed 15,000 policies, all of them designed to have a positive impact on climate change, and it identified the small number that seemed to work. That and more to come. Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for the Society at Science Foundation Ireland, joins us to tell us what was discovered. How small was the number of effective ones, Ruth?
Well, it is pretty small, Anton. It's about 4%. So this is really important research that was published in the journal Science last week, and it's from researchers in Germany. And exactly as you said, they looked back at 1,500 policies that have been implemented over the last 20 years in 41 different countries, including China, the US and India. And these 41 countries account for 81% of global emissions. So they're looking at a big part of the puzzle that we need to solve if we're going to deal with climate change. And the policies, as you can imagine, were wide ranging. They were things like energy efficient standards for household appliances, all the way to things like carbon taxes and energy pricing. And what they did was they looked at the amount of carbon coming out of four different sectors. So electricity, transport, building and kind of industrial sectors. And then they used a machine learning algorithm and they gave it the policies and they gave it the data about carbon emissions. And they said, can you map the policies being implemented to significant drops in carbon emissions? And they looked at drops of kind of between 5 and 10%, which are seen as kind of significant and meaningful drops. And what they found was only 63 of the 1,500 policies, that's about 4%, had any meaningful impact on emissions. And more importantly, they found those policies worked best to significantly reduce emissions when they were kind of done as a combination of policies, so not one instrument on its own. And what they found, and this is interesting because it kind of backs up work that came out of Oxford last year, is that some kind of pricing has to go into your mechanism. So if it doesn't kind of impact on the bottom line, it doesn't tend to work. And that's probably not going to surprise anybody.
Did they factor for the innate increase that there might have been in carbon emissions anyway? In other words, did they look exclusively at reductions or did they say, well, this was prophylactic in terms of further damage?
So they didn't. And that is one of the weak points. One of the other weak points is they didn't look at sectors like land use and agriculture, which we know is a big sector. So there are limits to this kind of work. But I mean, look, I mean, it sounds like very bad news if you're saying like all of this work was done and very little impact was had. I mean, the good news is we are now honing in on the policies that do work. And we know now that we need to have a mixture of kind of something that impacts the bottom line combined with something that incentivizes behavioral change. And they were able to look back at some examples of things where things had worked. So this is what we need to learn from. So for example, in the US, there was a big drop in vehicle emission, and that's a place where we have significant problems here in Ireland in our transport emissions. So an 8% drop. And that was a number of different instruments. So one was new rules about cars, which showed what was the minimum number of miles per gallon you've got to get from this vehicle, along with a tax break for motorists who bought cleaner cars. And then obviously nowadays that's moving to electric cars. So you can see you have to attack the individual problem from multiple different
angles.
Although
interestingly, if you look at the time frame of that was what, 2008 to 2010, I would have assumed that US car sales fell off a cliff, as did the capacity of people to pay for gas at the time. And I think gas was running towards $4 a gallon at the time.
It is. And look, when you look at transport, you're always going to have to factor in, as you say, there's going to be global shocks and things that are happening. But if you look at global trends in all of these things, what we're trying to do is link the things that work to the, you know, where we can actually make a difference. So, you know, it's important for us. And it's a new use of AI. And look, the flip side of AI is it's also using a lot of energy. And, you know, there's conversations about that. But I think it's very hard to step back and do these kind of complex multifactorial analysis. And AI is allowing to do that in a somewhat objective way. So that's helpful.
While we might have thought, well, there will be a lot of these that don't work and so only some that do, 4% is abysmal, isn't it?
It is. It's very, very low. And I think, look, that shows that we're learning all the time. And this is a really complex problem. But the studies are now coming out. It's why we need to keep investing in the science to understand the problem as we try to solve it, because it's not fully understood either.
Meanwhile, the world's second largest diamond ever has been found.
So this is a find again in the last couple of weeks in Botswana. And this diamond is enormous. For anybody that likes sparkly things, you'll like to go and look at it. It's the biggest find since the Cullinan diamond was found back in 1905, which was over 3,000 carats. And that's the diamond that famously got cut up and put into the crown jewels in Britain. And there's kind of a bit of a poetry in this, because this diamond came from Botswana. And interesting, Botswana's big sort of, when Botswana discovered diamonds and its real wealth came from diamonds the year after the British left. So there is kind of a poetic justice to that. But this diamond is nearly 2,500 carats. So it weighs over half a kilogram. And it was discovered about 300 miles north of Botswana's capital, which is Gaborone. They've had a real sort of streak of luck in finding huge diamonds in Botswana recently. There's four other massive diamonds that they found recently. And these diamonds are worth eye-watering amounts of money, you know, over $50 million maybe.
Five zero
for one stone. Yeah, so no one who's engagement ring shopping will be considering this one now. They haven't released a lot of detail about this particular stone, which they're calling the Lucara stone. So we don't know yet how clear it is or any of its other properties. But the president of Botswana has been pictured holding it. It fills the whole palm of his hand when he's standing there looking very happy with it.
And what do you do? Do you polish it as one single rock, or do you do like the British Crown Jewels and break it up?
I mean, that's who knows what'll happen now. But I mean, it is interesting because it comes from these things in Botswana called kimberlite pipes, and most of the world's mined diamonds come from these things, and they're sort of carrot shaped structures that come up from the mantle of the earth, where you have this incredibly high pressure and high temperature. So this diamond could have been formed more than a billion years ago down in the mantle of the earth in this very high pressure and temperature, and then a volcanic eruption brought it up to the surface. But it could have been sitting at the surface for 40 million years when the continents were still moving. But Botswana now has found this gem because they have this very unique geology under their feet.
Ruth, thank you very much. That is Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Science Foundation Ireland.
Green Scene on the Pat Kenny Show with AIB, working alongside Irish communities towards a low carbon future. AIB, for the life you're after.